Patrick's never-ending levels of apathy bring you.
Phoenix City!
Phoenix City. I'm Frosty. I'm joined by Patrick over there.
You are joined by me. This is really weird, but sure.
Barely, I think. Cam.
Good evening.
And Dave.
Good morning. It's definitely not evening.
Feels like it, though. At least you guys have probably had some sleep,
you are,
right?
You are cuddling a bottle of V, so yeah. We'll give you that.
It is definitely 9:45 a.m. on a Saturday morning.
Is it? So we've already wasted 15 minutes waiting for Patrick to turn up.
Yeah. Well, I had...
Actually longer. I also ate breakfast.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus, Patrick.
I had a muffin.
Yeah.
Okay, let's crack on. The reason why I'm sparking up a bit more than usual is that one, Patrick doesn't really give a flying.
I don't give a shit about anything anymore.
But also because we had a bit of a special event happen. Not really special, but someone spoke to us and it was good. So where do we start?
Well, shall we explain why this meeting came about first?
That's probably a good idea.
We got an email on...
First off, who's we?
Sorry, good point. Myself... Dave, Cam, which is really helpful for this podcast format, and Hard News received an email on Wednesday inviting us to a chat over lunch with Rob Morrison on Thursday.
Rob Morrison, the board chair.
I think everyone at this point knows who Rob Morrison
is. Just want to specify, mate.
Yes, the chairman of Wellnix and the chairman of the Wellington Phoenix. And so we accepted and we went along on Thursday to hear from Rob because nobody has. Have I summed that up well, Dave?
Yeah, reasonably. I mean, it's worth noting that the entire rest of the back office staff are overseas at the moment. So I think the reality of this is the club wanted to catch up with us. They wanted to have a chat with the fans. I know there's another chat planned, which is around some different stuff. So that's planning for next season, which we'll wait until they're back from Hong Kong. But I think there was some stuff they wanted to address direct to some fans and kind of get the vibe from us, but also be able to give us some information. And the only person really in the country with any level of detail on that currently is Rob.
Correct,
so it happened that we got to sit down with Rob for an hour or so.
Yeah.
So what do you think that Rob wanted to talk to you guys?
I think that, and this is one of the issues here, is that he doesn't want to talk to media for his reasons. I don't necessarily agree with all of his reasoning, but I can understand his reasoning in that he believes that anything that he goes and says out there will get twisted and turned around, and he just has an intense distrust of both the Australian, first and foremost, and the New Zealand media. I think he wanted to talk to us to try and lay out his position on these kinds of things, because otherwise there's just a void out there. I think they saw that we were doing the hard fight and we were starting to waver slightly on whether we actually thought the club was going to be sold or not.
Slightly, quite heavily, wavering quite heavily.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things for him is actually he wasn't telling us anything new.
No.
He just wanted to reassure us and... And in his mind, it's going to get out to the wider fans, and obviously with the podcast and stuff, it should do. That, you know, nothing's changed since they made a statement. It must be, what, 2 and a bit weeks ago now?
Correct, yeah.
That everything about that statement remains the same, you know? He says in that interview with Piney that there have been meetings and all that sort of stuff, and none of that has changed. Those meetings aren't about a sale. They're not trying to sell the club. He just wanted to say, hey, here is the truth from my mouth. None of that's changed, essentially.
Yeah.
So what's kind of happened in that last 2.5 weeks is the Southwest Sydney rumour that's kind of floated out. Should we kind of work out what there is about that? So in my head, there's kind of three parties involved. There's obviously Southwest Sydney, the expansion, potential expansion team. There's the Knicks, and then there's FFA have sparked up as well. What did Rob say directly about that? Was there a meeting? What was the guts of it?
Yeah, so he talked about it. Obviously, as the club's position has always been, they don't want to have negotiations in public. So we didn't go into exact details of what's going on there, but he did give us some pretty general stuff around it. So they've spoken to Southwest Sydney. That is the thing that has happened. One of the things Southwest Sydney are interested in is hosting some games in Campbelltown, probably. The Southwest Sydney view of why they want to do that is almost as a proof of concept for their bid. Hey, look, we've hosted an A-League game. We got 30,000 people or whatever it is along to this game. There's an appetite in our region. We're a good expansion bid. And so there was talk of that being maybe one or two games. Maybe it's more. Whether that's one a year for the next two seasons or whether that's two in a season or whatever, we have no idea. But that was the key thing they're interested in, is around that. Rob also talked about how I think he said there's six NPL teams in that region that bid's coming from, and there's no coherent academy structure or anything around that, which Southwest Sydney wouldn't be able to set up in a short space of time. So there was discussion around potentially working together on academy stuff, because obviously the Phoenix have a running academy and are potentially looking at a partnership there if it was available. They'd love to have more Australians coming into the academy than they have currently. And so that's what that kind of discussion was. Whether what money was changing hands and how exactly that worked, we don't know. But the key thing that the FFA needed to be looped in on is if they were to look at moving games, even our games to Auckland require an FFA approval. That's the reality of hosting games. So if they're not going to be hosted in Wellington, regardless of where they are, FFA need to be looped in on that. And my impression of this, and this is only my view, is that we weren't at a stage where Wellnix had agreed to anything. They were just sounding out the FFA on whether that would be a thing worth exploring. Because if the FFA outright go, well, no, that's never happening, there's no point in going down the track of negotiating how that might work financially or, you know, nutting out details to then just have them slap it down. So this was never a sale. It was hosting and maybe some joint partnership, I think, on academy and stuff.
I think the other important thing to note there was that there was no signed agreement on the table between Phoenix and Southwest that was presented to FFA, and that's how those articles seem to frame it.
Yeah, they did talk about a proposal, and so you're saying that there was no actual agreement, there was just a discussion.
Yeah. I think it's also important to note that there was never any $15 million offer of buying the club. It needs to be said, and it specifically was said that by Rob, that there was no offer. So whatever reports are that the FFA is rejecting an offer of $15 million is just plain not true.
Yeah, and so what the offer actually was what Dave's talking about, is that it was a bit around this partnership to play games over there. And I think Rob didn't say this outright, but the impression I got was that those two, three games a season would be instead of Auckland. They wouldn't be extra games being taken away from Wellington. They're already the games being taken away from Wellington, just going to Campbelltown instead.
That's how I saw that as well.
There's also a bonus there that Rob talked about of, obviously, metrics are important. So the reason we go to Auckland has some financial benefits, and previously it used to have crowd implications as well. The crowd implications are kind of gone, but hosting a game in Sydney where there definitely is going to be a group marketing that heavily, it's going to bump our home game crowd metric significantly. And obviously that's important rolling into this 2-year extension that we need. So a crowd bump would be great for those numbers. So financial benefit and potentially a metrics boost.
So you're kind of thinking that maybe just the idea that potentially getting 20,000 for three games over the course of a season when we need to be hitting 10,000 on average.
You look at the teams that have derbies, and the derbies, let's take the Mariners and the Jets, for example. The F3 derby between those teams, where they have 3,000 people travel down, bumps their crowd averages for the season a whole bunch. And that's even more extreme for Melbourne City. They get a game where they have 30,000, and compared to their 7,000 they usually get, that's a big bump for their average.
So you're thinking
three times a season.
They usually get one or two games. They don't get all three bump in their average. They have one or two of those as home games.
So you think
the Victory also get this bump, but not as much because they have a higher average.
So you're thinking that in playing these games at Campbelltown, you'd be targeting Western Sydney and Sydney to get their home
fans.
You'd
think so, right? Like, if they want to show that they can host a thing and that they're a legitimate bid here, surely they want to try and target a team that they think is going to get the crowd.
So you think that maybe 7,000-8,000 Sydney fans, or, you know, 3,000 Wanderers fans would be, sorry, bit of a dig.
Yeah, I think that would be a thing that, this wasn't mentioned at the meeting, but I think logically that makes sense, because then you get travelling away support coming down, you're showing that it's a thriving, the stadium's got atmosphere and that kind of thing.
We're definitely at the point on, this is us speculating on what Rob said rather than anything Rob said.
That wasn't, and I think we should be quite clear on this in this podcast, is that there are things that Rob said that we're happy to report, and there are things that we're speculating about that is us speculating.
Based on what Rob said.
One of the things, this all kind of becomes, because of the expansion that FFA are trying to run at the moment. And Rob made the point that the 10 professional clubs at the moment do not want expansion. They are opposed to it for obvious reasons.
Well, let's go into those reasons.
Yeah, sure.
Just spit them out.
Well, it's the APFCA, the Association of Professional Footballing Clubs Australia, want an independent league, and they see FFA trying to muddy that process by bringing new teams in. And obviously, they have a league that has TV money that they've been working on for the last 10 years, and that they're the ones who have built it up. And all of a sudden, have other clubs come in that's something they don't want. Of the bids, this is something Rob said to us, of the bids, in terms of geography, that Southwest Sydney is actually quite a good bid because it taps into a market that just doesn't have an A-League club supporting it at the moment.
And it's the fastest growing area of Sydney.
Yeah. And so the other bid in Sydney is the Southern Expansion bid, which is the Craig Foster one. That is basically entirely in Sydney FC's target market at the moment. And Sydney FC are majorly opposed to it.
Yeah.
And so this Southwest Sydney bid actually makes sense if they're going to line up with somebody. It's in an untapped area, like Dave said, six NPL clubs. And it's somewhere that could theoretically hold an A-League team.
And the FFA seem to be pushing their derbies, so another club in, say, Melbourne or Sydney too.
Yeah. I think this is now me speculating. I think we're most likely to get a Melbourne and a Sydney team out of this expansion.
If you look at the bids as they exist, those are easily the most mature bids.
So I think
it's interesting. It's interesting comparing Southern Expansion because I think they have the financial backing and they have a very very well crafted bid.
They have a figurehead as well,
but they are let down by the fact that they are almost entirely within Sydney FC's catchment, and so there's going to be issues with that. You're not actually expanding at that point. You're just kind of carving off a portion of Sydney FC.
Sydney FC is struggling with crowd numbers as it is.
The Southwest Sydney bid is interesting because it's a big area that's largely untapped, and as Cam says, it's a big growth area, but I don't know that they have that same kind of figurehead or necessarily the same security of funding at this stage. They might get there, and if they do, they're a pretty good bid, you think.
The first time that I heard that this bid exists was when we had supposedly sold the club for $15 million to this bid, and that was the first time I heard about it. I think that sums up where this bid actually is in terms of the bid itself.
Well, let's go to that rumour then. Obviously the $15 million, Cam's already spoken that it's
fabrication.
Yeah, like, it was vaporware.
Plain and simple, yeah.
Okay, so where is this rumour kind of coming from? Is it kind of people mashing together stories? Are there stories out there?
Yes,
what stories are out there?
It's basically three different parts of a story that I think it was Davidovich, was it? The reporter has gone.
And Bossy.
And they've gone, we've got this piece here from the FFA saying there's this meeting. We've got this piece here from SWS. And we've got this piece here from some other source. And they've put it all together and said, here's this bid. Whereas, as a matter of fact, all they're doing is stage one, having a chat and seeing what does SWS want? What can the Phoenix provide? And what does the Phoenix actually want to provide?
Okay, so circling back to saying what actually is, this is Rob saying that's what actually happened, right?
It's an interesting one because there's actually three kind of on the record pieces about this. So initially there's an opinion piece that suggests it's been sold, and then
that's Davidovich's.
I think him and Bossy both published a fairly similar thing around this, so I don't know which is first. I don't know that timeline exactly, but the thing that happened after that was Gallup confirmed he'd had a meeting with Rob Morrison and I can't think of the guy's name.
Maury something.
I want to say it's Gallows' his last name.
No.
But whoever the Southwest Sydney guy is. So the three of them had sat down in a room and had a meeting, and Gallup confirmed that. And so people took that as confirmation of this initial opinion piece.
Yeah.
And the meeting obviously happened, therefore all of that's true. Since then, Southwest Sydney have denied there's a sale. The Phoenix have denied there's a sale. And Gallup never said it was about a sale. He talked about discussing a proposal. Now, the way I would read that is he's viewed it as a proposal, but proposal can be in very early stages. Proposal doesn't mean finalized agreement.
Proposal can mean that Southwest Sydney have a proposal for the Phoenix, which they did.
Correct. And the proposal was around hosting games. And they definitely sat down and discussed a proposal to maybe host games. The difference here is this wasn't a signed agreement. This wasn't a sale of the club, but there was a proposal discussed in a meeting. And so I think the three actual on the record pieces of information we have here are all consistent with Rob's version, which says to me that some leaps were made and then confirmation bias kind of came into play with piecing together what Gallup said with that and going, well, obviously it's a $16 million sale.
Yeah.
But no one on the record has ever said that. You look at those initial pieces, they're entirely opinion without a named source, not even an unnamed source, just pure speculation. And, there are parts in there that are probably on the money around hosting games in Campbelltown, but it's not a 100% sale. It's not a transfer of ownership over a 2-year period. It's none of those things.
So it's a mashup of probably some second-hand information and a little bit of...
Yeah, and maybe it may well be the case that Southwest Sydney were saying, we'd love to buy the Phoenix. I wouldn't be surprised if they said that and then someone took that as, oh, that's actually been agreed. Because I'm sure any expansion bid with any license would love to buy it. That's the easiest way in, right?
It's easy.
It doesn't mean Rob entertained that part of the discussion at all. And he certainly didn't mention that even coming up as a, we want to wholly buy the Phoenix.
My understanding is with the expansion, they wouldn't be getting any of that TV money as well. So that'd be an extra, if they bought an existing license, yep, they would get that part of the, which is around $3 million,
give or take. It basically covers the salary cap. So it's, you basically have to have around about $12 million on the table that you're not going to be getting from the league that every other club gets to fund yourself over the first 3 years. And that is a stumbling block. You have to have it's basically there so that you have to have money to support you, and you're not just going to come in and freeload on the TV deal that the other 10 clubs have built up over the years. It will stop clubs from being able to bid, and it, I don't really have a view on whether it's a good thing or not. I haven't really thought about it too hard, but it's certainly a thing. And buying a Phoenix license would skip that. And that's why so many expansion clubs are expressing an interest, in inverted commas, in buying the Phoenix license.
It's not just the Phoenix license.
Don't me read out that text from the Brisbane Strikers, because that's exactly what the Strikers were trying to do, was circumvent that part of the thing. And obviously that never went anywhere and got reported as such, but yeah.
One key thing that also seems to get forgotten in that, and Rob didn't mention this is Gallup who's brought this up, talks around how there's a condition on the Phoenix license that's territorial to New Zealand. So all the speculation of potentially buying us out for 100% might well have a massive stumbling block in it anyway if that condition does exist on our license. Because even if you buy that license apparently is conditional to New Zealand. So there's no way a Southwest Sydney can 100% buy it and host, you know, 2 years from now transfer it to Sydney. That's not a thing
and
that exists.
From FFA's perspective, why would they let somebody sell the license now? And theoretically, the Phoenix are going to be playing in Wellington next season. And if they were signed a deal today, which they're not going to do, it would be for the season after this one coming, because they wouldn't be able to put it together this far. So why would FFA allow a deal like that when they could say, no, wait 12 months, and then the club has to pay a fee to FFA to get in, and they have all the things that FFA get out of it rather than just the Phoenix selling their license? It makes no sense to me that the FFA would allow something like this now, and I think everyone knows this, and I think all the clubs know this as well. Why would FFA allow it now when in 2 years' time FFA can get a big payout because of it?
And I think it's important to note that it's not just the Phoenix receiving these contacts. Every club gets contacts like this. It's just that because of the precarious nature of our license and our situation, we're the ones that are getting reported on regularly.
Okay, so coming back to, we've kind of, it sounds a little illogical that there would be a legitimate offer for the club, because it likely wouldn't happen. Just because of the territorial part. Also, the next time don't want to sell, or certainly haven't had an offer that makes them want to sell. So we're why are these rumours continuing to circle?
Well, I think half the problem is that the Phoenix aren't saying anything. I've spoken about why Rob doesn't want to do that. But if you leave a void of information, people will fill it with their own. And it's a very deliberate tactic from Rob and therefore the Phoenix to not say anything. The result of it is that the rumours keep circulating.
Okay, well, coming to then, we obviously see a lot of the media coming, especially from Australia, being fairly negative against the Knicks. But what about New Zealand media? Guys like Piney, Andrew Vorman, Liam Hislop, Simon Hampton, all have shown an interest in football. Does that kind of anti-Nick sentiment come through in this stuff? Or
this wasn't something we discussed with Rob. Rob expressed his distrust of the media in general. We didn't bring up specifically the New Zealand media. So this is nothing. This is not from the meeting, what we're going to say now. But there does seem to be distrust there, because these guys have run with what the Australians have published. They've published the same things. They've just got it off the wire and published it in their channels, and they've written opinion pieces that say that the Phoenix would be stupid to do this, and New Zealand Herald's getting rugby journalists to write opinion pieces, and none went out this morning that I saw about it, and so that's why there is a distrust. Whether that's completely valid distrust, I'm not certain. Dave, do you have feelings on this?
Yes, I do. So, I mean, you guys obviously know what my job is, and so for more than a decade, analysing media has been my job. So, I don't always give advice around how media works, but I definitely have feelings on this. And so I think there's a reality here that Rob is tapping into and kind of making a leap. So I think it's not hard for anyone who reads the news in general to have noticed that these days, all news sources, no matter what they're reporting on, sports or otherwise, are very polar in their reporting. It's either very negative or very positive. It's this is the best new thing to have happened or we're all going to die, because that's what gets clicks. And that's the way the media has gone over the last decade or so. And so often the content doesn't necessarily reflect that, but headlines definitely go that way. And I think the issue Rob has here is that he remembers stories even from New Zealand journalists. And I think, like you say, Patrick, he doesn't necessarily make this distinction between Australia and New Zealand. I think he sees the media as the media.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
He remembers specific stories from New Zealand journalists where he feels like they've taken something that could have been, you know, a slightly good story and spun it with a negative headline. And that's because they couldn't spin it as a highly favorable thing, so they focused on a slightly negative aspect. And so it kind of it's confirmation bias again, where he thinks they're picking on him, and so he only remembers the things where they picked on him, not the rest of the content that actually might have been not that bad.
Yeah.
And so in his head, I think even the journalists who we would agree would be quite fair and reasonable if he was to talk to them, in his head, all he can remember is examples of when they were cynical about something or, you know, whatever. And I think, you know, Vorman, Hislop, those guys, I think they're great journalists, but I definitely know there are times we could find statements they've said that were a little cynical about the Phoenix.
Yeah.
And part of that is probably in response to not getting the access they want.
And to back up that point, this is something Rob did raise, is that even though take Jason Pine. Jason Pine is the club's journalist. When the club wants to get something out there, they'll go to Jason Pine because he's on board. This week, even Jason Pine wrote an opinion piece that said the Phoenix need to get their act together. And that's the one thing that Rob mentioned to us. That's the one part of all this that Rob pulled out and said, Pine has written this thing as well.
Yeah.
And so I think that kind of backs up what you're saying a little bit.
Mm. There's a naivety as well from the club in that. So they obviously put a statement out that they felt was very clear. Those 2.5 weeks ago, whatever the date was.
That's the sci-fi release, right?
Correct. Yeah. And it was pretty clear. And then he did a half hour on radio with Piney that, again, he feels was pretty clear. Now, there's issues with that are separate. Like, I don't think Australian journalists have access to Piney's interview particularly easily.
Yeah.
But the statement they did, and the way the Phoenix feel about that is they've already said, this is the case. We're not selling it. Here it is in black and white. The problem is that the media don't go, oh, let's look back at their last release. They don't view that as addressing the new rumor. But the club, in their minds, are saying, we've already addressed that. We don't need to address it again. It's right here. The fact that it was, you know, a week before the new rumor, the media go, well, this is new. You haven't addressed this. The club go, but we did back here.
But they don't say that part, though. That's the part they don't say.
They're not saying it to media, but in their own minds and internally, that's what they're saying is, but we said it back here.
Yeah.
We don't need to say it again. We've already said it.
Potentially, just pointing out,
we said this a week ago, yeah, would be enough. Saying to someone like Vorman or Hislop, hey, that remains true. We'd like to reiterate all of the things we said there and copy-paste it, you know? It'd be fine, but the club don't see that as a thing they need to do because they think they've already done it, which I would disagree with entirely, but I can understand on some levels that internal, there's the distrust combined with their impression that they've said it. They don't think they've done nothing. They think they've dealt with it.
So that distrust, or our view that there's that level of distrust, is probably why Rob came to you three and news. Do you think that he wanted to get that out there?
I don't think that's how it went at all. I think Rob wanted to address us specifically, and
I think it's fans.
He basically wanted to say directly to the fans through us that this is the situation, the truth from his words, making sure that we disseminate that to the people that we know.
And I think he understands that we have the platform, like the podcast, we have the website, and the social media accounts, we have a way that we can address a lot of people very quickly, which meeting with some random fans because they have a season pass might not necessarily do.
There's a logistical issue with that as well.
Exactly, yeah.
This was able to be set up within 24 hours by one email from the club to us saying, hey, lunch tomorrow, are you guys available?
Yeah.
If they wanted to do a fan forum, which I think the reality is Rob probably would be open to, there's actually a big amount of cost and logistics, and it would take you 2 weeks just to be able to organise that. And even then, you still only get people who are in Wellington and free at whatever moment you choose to be able to do that. This was, we can organise this quickly, and we can get that same reassurance out that we want to get out without having to do it more broadly. I think there are other ways, like a newsletter to the club would be great, but that's not a forum for questions.
So to the members of the club.
Yes,
I agree. I think that potentially just reiterating what they've done in the media release in a newsletter would dispel a lot of these. And this is it's strange because a little while back, everyone was complaining that the club was releasing all the news through the media and that the fans weren't getting told by the club around player re-signings and all sorts of things. And a lot of fans kicked up a fuss and said, we'd love for this to be communicated to us as well. So the club started doing that. They started when there was a big piece of news, like the Dario Kalisic leaving news, that was first released in an email to the members. And now a lot of people are saying, yes, you're talking to fans, but why aren't you talking to the media? And it's just like the Phoenix can't win. Yeah. And that's also a problem here, is that whatever the Phoenix do, it's the wrong thing in somebody's eyes. And so they can't win. So they've chosen a tactic here and they're sticking with it rather than flip-flopping between two. And whether that's the right tactic is up for discussion. And we've had this discussion. But that's a reason why that they're doing it this way. Whether it's the right choice or not, I'm not so sure. I think, and the time's probably passed for this, but a newsletter that went out to fans that the media would then see because they signed up to those things.
To be fair, that didn't happen last night.
Did it?
They emailed about the re-signing of Libyan Jura, and yeah. there was an email to fans, and it included a statement around the sale in there.
Okay, I didn't see that. But that's
there
good.
Two or three paragraphs were around, we want to reiterate there is no sale. It was quotes from Domi, I think, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But so they had this meeting on Thursday, and on Friday they sent an email to all members. So this wasn't a, hey, we only want to talk to a couple of people and that's the only thing we're going to do.
Yeah.
They also do want to communicate more directly to fans, but they understand that, you know, an email newsletter, like I say, isn't going to be a forum for questions. You can't go, but hey, what about this? Hey, tell me more on that.
Yeah.
And we kind of had that opportunity to press them on a few things and get that information and hopefully be able to feed it back to people, which is why obviously we're doing this in this kind of format today with questions from someone who wasn't in the room.
Yeah.
So we've had Dura and Libby's signings announced. What other concrete details kind of came out potentially around the coach?
Well, I think from a Phoenix perspective, it's business as usual right now. There's no view that the Phoenix are shutting down operations or anything like that.
You'd be concerned if that was the view.
Yeah, but one of the things that Rob said to us is why would we be doing all these things, signing players, signing new coaches, if we were going to wind down the club?
Going to Hong Kong, going to Beijing.
Trying to organise the Capital Cup again, all those things. And so from the Phoenix perspective, it's business as usual. They're obviously having to find a coach, which is different. That's what I think that happens every off-season. But they are signing players, they're looking for... Well, okay, the last two seasons, sure. But they're signing players, and they're talking to players, they're talking to coaches, and by all accounts, it's very close. Unfortunately, we didn't get too much more information beyond that.
I got the impression there's an offer out there, but that's about as far as it could go.
So. Yeah, well, the problem with signing anybody is that they have to agree to want to come. And so you can offer someone anything they want, and if they say no, you can't sign them. So... I think that's played into it a little bit. But obviously we had the incident 2 weeks ago with Stats McGee. Like, that surely pushed things back. We didn't get confirmation that he was actually a candidate from Rob. But Rob did mention him because we asked, we made the joke about Stats McGee, that must have set you back. Rob didn't ever say that he was definitely, they were looking at him. Rob didn't say that anything like that. But we talked about him with Rob, and Rob said it wouldn't be a good look for the club if we were to sign him in 2 weeks and he would punch somebody. I think it also wouldn't be a good look for the club signing him now after the Carney incident.
Well, no, the whole offseason, you just have people speculating on precisely that, because essentially you can't coach the first few games of the season.
Yeah.
The whole offseason, we focused on the fact our coach had done that.
Yeah, so,
and he also had previous for
it. I think that absolutely set them back a little bit, because they had looked at this guy and weren't actually able to move forward with it. So there are definitely reasons why that can't happen. At the same time, people point to the 80 days it's been since Dario said he was leaving, and I can see that point of view. It's a long time. It's almost 3 months. Last year, I thought that us not signing a coach early would be detrimental to us in the transfer market, and I was wrong. It just wasn't at all. And so I don't think there's any harm in not having a coach at this point. Domi confirmed to us the other week that all these player signings that are happening, Libby and Jura, they're actually talking to these potential coaches about these guys, and they're basing decisions on what these potential coaches are saying. So I think, Jura is an interesting one, but I think any coach would want Libby here.
Yeah, Libby is a no-brainer. I actually think with the turnover in the squad that we've had moving into this next season, that Jura is a bit of a no-brainer as well. Looking at the fact that he's probably not going to get a lot of game time, we still need someone with that experience floating around the squad, and there just isn't anybody at the moment. So I think that played a big part in why he'll be re-signed in the playing squad.
Just before we move on entirely from the manager thing, I think there's a really key discussion that we did have with Rob that we can talk about, and we should, is when he was talking about Slaps McGee, he talked about how they do want a manager who's going to bring some fight to the club, and he made a joke about, you know, not that sort of fight, obviously, but yeah. he discussed at some length around how they really recognise what they need out of a manager for this season, and so this was really interesting insight into what they're looking for here. And so he was talking about how they recognise that they need someone to come in with that kind of that fighting spirit that you'd almost have for a relegation battle, where, you know, that there's a hard line we need to meet here, which is avoid relegation. Obviously, there isn't relegation for us. And so the goal for us is actually not don't finish last, it's finish fourth or fifth. That's a hard line in the sand here. If we need a guy who's going to come in, he doesn't have to win us the league, but he needs to get a squad fired up and ready to fight, to scrap for every point, to hit that fourth or fifth mark. And that's all the season is about. It's do that.
Rob was very conscious that we only have 2 years to run on the license. Yep. And these 2 years have to be good years. We can't have someone come in with a five-year plan. There's no point to that. The club might not exist in 2 years. And Rob was very realistic about that. And so we need someone who can come in now. I mean, Cam, you made the joke about Big Sam coming in.
Yeah, basically, it's a Big Sam, not an Arsene Wenger. That's exactly what you need.
And that Rob riffed on that for a little bit and said that the Big Sam kind of candidate is what we need. And I think that's a valid thing to be doing. Yeah. And so in these coaches that they're looking at, they're actually looking at, can they just do a job this season for us?
Let's just clarify. It isn't Big Sam.
It's not Big Sam.
It's not Big Sam, and it's not Arsene Wenger.
Are we sure it's not Big Sam?
I can 100% guarantee I know
how much money he wants too.
I'm positive it's not either of them.
It was great to hear Rob saying, I think, things we would all agree with around that. The way he's talking, they're not looking for a candidate who's just going to fill the role and do an okay job. They're looking for something quite specific, and I think the specific thing they're looking for is the right thing. They're
a man motivator.
Yeah, they're focusing on the right criteria that I would completely agree with. Whether it's the view of everyone, I don't know, but this is essentially a one season do that job role. And if you do that job, then maybe it's longer. But we don't need a candidate for 5 years. We need a candidate for one season, and then once we've done the job that one season, it's another one season, and then from there we can go further.
Okay, talking about the one season, we're really coming to the license.
Yep.
We're saying we've got 2 years left on our license. Do we think that the independent A? Well, did Rob mention the independent A League? Does he think that that's a possibility, a probability, a likelihood? Who knows?
So the probability is, yes, it is probable that it would become a...
This is from Rob.
But it's definitely a possible outcome, a likely outcome. The whether it happened in time is not something we can... not something we know that's going to happen or not. So whether it happens within the 2 years, no idea.
So he thinks that the independent A-League will happen, but not necessarily before our license expires?
Well, that's the question. That's the question that they have, yeah.
I think he's bullish that it will. I think he views it as a good possibility. He sees independent A-League as basically a certainty, but whether that's within 2 years, he's not sure. But I would say he thinks it's likely it could be. And so that's obviously a thing that, from his point of view, solves almost all of their problems. If that happens within 12 to 18 months, fucking great. If it's that 18 to 24 month period, things get interesting, because obviously some other forces may have come into play with what they're doing and what their strategy is, and, you know, what the shareholders and investors want to do. But I think he thinks it's quite likely that within that 12 to 18 months we're all good, but he's not going to plan that's a certainty, because it's not.
Okay, spitballing here then, if the independent A-League happens but it is nearer that 24 month period, and, you know, there's the possibility of the license expiring, and then what happens with the club? Do you think that, did he mention what he thought the independent A-League would have an opinion on having a club in New Zealand, in Wellington, the Phoenix?
Yeah, I mean, they love it. And in fact, I think independent A-League would view more than one club in New Zealand as a great outcome. Obviously, that's a much longer term plan, but they are most keen on markets that they're not getting into. That's their key thing. And I mean, the independent A-League, the whole concept around that is actually about the money and the fair share of money going back into the league. So, I mean, I'm not going to give the numbers because I don't recall them properly, but they're a huge proportion of the income that the FFA get, let's say over 80% of all FFA income. Is from the A-League. It's the TV deal, it's the merchandise, it's all of that, and that goes into FFA. At present, the clubs themselves see around a third of all of that income.
Yeah. And that's in the form of paying for the salary cap.
Correct. And so they respect the fact, obviously, that the FFA does wear some administration cost around the running of the league, and that's fair, but it's nowhere near two-thirds of that cost. And you look at other independent leagues around the world, the EPL was using the example, and you know, around 10% of that income goes to the FA rather than two-thirds. And so the clubs with their independent push don't necessarily want to go that far, but they do want to find a ground where they can actually fund themselves and be sustainable based on the revenue that they are generating, because the TV deal is money the clubs are generating. You know, the league generates that income, they deserve their fair share of it. And the independent A-League proposal, should it be exactly as the clubs would love to design it, would see the Phoenix on completely equal footing and receiving a fair share of that money. They would love it to be covering not only salary cap, but also some marketing costs, some back office stuff. You know, it shouldn't just be a player cost. The money is there and exists, but at the moment it's used to subsidize a range of other things that, as far as the clubs are concerned, aren't generating revenue. Now, obviously, the FFA have a remit to build up football in Australia, and that's, you know, a fair goal and one we would expect them to do. So it's about finding that balance between the clubs actually being sustainable, because at the moment it's 7 or 8 of the clubs are posting, you know, posting losses every season in excess of $500,000, some of them significantly higher than that.
Yeah.
And that's not sustainable. You know, we're seeing crowd numbers drop, we're seeing TV viewership drop, and we've got these clubs running themselves into the ground in terms of cost, while the FFA hold all that money and negotiate all the deals around that. It's not a view the clubs have that that's okay, and it can't continue like that.
Yeah, and so when they were negotiating before the independent A-League became the only way forward, the clubs were asking for $6 million from FFA. And so this is not something we talked about with Rob.
Per club.
This is not something we talked about with Rob specifically, but this is going back 12 months, articles that were published about the deal and why FIFA had to come in, everything like that. And so they wanted $6 million per club, so $60 million of the money that comes in, rather than the $35 million or so that they were splitting to cover the cap. And so that holds true. That's kind of the ballpark of where they want their funding to be, where it's going over and above. And so they've held strong on that across 12 months. And it's, if they didn't want to do it for obvious reasons, and that's why FIFA have come in to normalize, so to speak.
Just to clarify, so the FFA also negotiates the deal with broadcasters like Fox and Sky, and that would then also be taken over by the independent A-League, presumably.
I mean, obviously the structure isn't agreed at all. You know, you need the Congress working group to figure out what they're doing first, and then we need to be board approved. But I think my understanding of a deal around how the clubs would view independent A-League working is probably a percentage type deal of let's call it 20% of all the revenue they're producing goes back into the FA directly. And that way there's an incentive both for the clubs to negotiate themselves better deals, but actually those better deals benefit the FA as well. So it's not a fixed fee or anything like that. It would be percentage based. But where exactly that percentage sits would obviously need to be agreed at an FFA board level.
Yeah. And it sounds like the Congress working group is moving forward. I mean, it's definitely happening. They're currently in the stage of putting together who's actually on it. The representatives have been named. I have no idea who they actually are, although a lot of them are from state federations. But FIFA's appointing a head of that. All these things are still happening. And they're moving forward.
Slowly.
They're expected to report back end of June, is that right?
So that
will come around pretty quick. Obviously, it feels very slow moving at this stage, but actually that's not that far away in terms of knowing what that is. And that Rob views that as quite a key point. You know, that will give them a level of certainty around how fast they think things can move here. If the time frame that comes out of that working group is very long, obviously his view on how quickly independent A-League could happen changes. But I think Lowy is due for... FFA chairman is due for re-election around November, and there's a view that probably Lowy will not remain at that point. And so, you know, it's all around the, there's a few key points coming up that'll dictate how fast this could move. So there'll be some signals coming that will mean we have a better idea of how long this process takes.
It's not, let's find out where we're at in 12 months and reevaluate then. Yeah. We'll know across the next 12 months where things are heading.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So that's the best case scenario as far as Rob's concerned as the independent A-League. So should the independent A-League not happen or not happen in a time frame that is going to make that obvious, what steps are going on around meeting the quote-unquote metrics? I mean, we've talked about the Campbelltown idea of pushing games out there to try and get numbers in to boost the, those numbers. So anything else that was discussed at all?
Well, it's a meeting that Dave talked about previously, coming up with band groups to work on engagement and other ideas about how to get more people through the door. There's lots of different things going on in the background that people see. There's negotiations that Rob goes into, for example, about Campbelltown, as you say. There's other people that are interested. Those metrics are set in stone. Like, if we achieve them, we get extensions. So they're not sitting on their asses not working towards achieving those metrics.
It's also worth noting, so as Cam says, there are metrics set in stone. Achieve them, extensions automatic. It doesn't mean, however, that even if we fall short of them, that the license will not be extended anyway. So it's not an all or nothing here. So I think if you achieve them, it's an automatic extension. You know, it's like a license. Contract trigger. You know, play 10 games, extension.
Yeah.
Play 9 games doesn't mean you're not getting extended. It just means it's a new discussion. And so they are working very hard behind the scenes to try and achieve all these things, and they always have been. But the biggest thing remains on-field performance. You know, when we perform well, we get crowds, and getting crowds actually fulfills most of these metrics, because, you know, it's around sales, it's around TV viewership. All of this stuff is improved by simply winning games. The stuff that's not around that, like the financial stability and all those kind of metrics, actually the club are probably one of the best performing in the league on. So there's no issues there. The only stuff we fall short on, to my understanding, is crowd and viewership and that stuff. And win games, we fix that. So he obviously works on stuff behind the scenes around trying to improve that in ways that a board can manage, but there's also a strong focus on just the football side of the club doing well.
Nice finish.
Yeah.
Big finish.
That's my McDonald's coming up.
Yeah. Nice. You kind of talk about the on-field stuff, but coming back to what you said about the FFA chair, I think he is Lowy.
O'Rourke.
No,
you're wrong.
He's the head of the A-League. He's
my bad.
Yeah, the A-League. So his, you would think that potentially if his, he's viewed as a more unfriendly component to the FFA, you would think that if we didn't meet the metrics, that if he, if a friendlier figure was elected to the head of the FFA, then an extension would be more likely.
It would certainly be more likely. Until you know who that person is, there's no such thing as a guarantee, right? But I think if Lowy's gone, things probably get more friendly.
Yeah.
I think O'Rourke, who Cam mentions, is rather friendly towards the club. I think if he was the one on his own making these decisions, I think Rob would be in a very happy position. I think he'd be quite comfortable with that. Gallup's a bit of an unknown quantity. As I talked about in the stuff I've posted on the FIFA website, you know, I've met Gallup on several occasions. Rob obviously meets them often. And at that level, there's definitely discussions where publicly he says things that beat us down a little. But behind the scenes, some of those senior staff, Gallup included, are actually quite friendly about the club and about the structure and the stability we bring. So there's an element there of at Gallup's level having to play several different negotiations all at once. Obviously, he is currently the one who is tasked with the Fox TV deals. Fox obviously have an agenda against the Knicks because that is not viewers for them. But at a league level, they're happy with viewers in any market. But Fox obviously only care about viewers in an Australian market. So they have no reason to want us in. So Gallup, in terms of negotiations with Fox and the fact he's in charge of that, needs to keep them on side. But actually, behind the scenes, he'd much rather have a club like the Phoenix than have, you know, a Brisbane who aren't paying their players. So it's balancing those two different things. And it would go a hell of a long way if some of his public statements could include some of the things he says behind closed doors. But at this stage, his public persona is more around keeping the TV deal and the sponsors happy, because obviously sponsors are Lowy in that side of things. The TV are Fox. And so publicly he keeps that more on side than he does the clubs. But behind the scenes, it's quite different.
It seems like there is a kind of a flow forward. One of the things that obviously Rob will need to do, and the club in general, is the people that a lot of fans are feeling disgruntled and frustrated, and presumably that's a little bit why Rob wanted to speak with you guys. So did he mention anything else about how he was looking to engage with the fans? Is the planning...
There's planning, definitely. It's not a thing we discuss with Rob, because obviously that's largely an operational thing rather than a board. But I know that planning is existing and a thing they're focused on.
We talked about big picture stuff with Rob. We didn't talk about who's going to be in the meeting between the fans and the club, the list that's coming up, things like that. So it's hard to answer that question based on this meeting, and I don't think it is a question we can answer. So,
but we do know that there is that planning group that will involve some people from the Fever, and we'd be able to...
And people from outside the Fever, too. Yeah. The Fever's not the only supporters of the group of the club, and the club know that. And so they want to get other people involved. There's people like Nicky O'Connor, who runs supporters groups on Facebook, and those kinds of people I think the club definitely want to engage with because they see the value in that. And so, yeah.
Domi mentioned some community groups as well, trying to get them more involved when we had them on the pod.
I think that's different. I think that's not necessarily meeting with them. It's more helping get them involved and like meeting them in terms of how to fix the club, which is what they're kind of going for with fans. But those kind of things are how do we get people actually along to the games? I think they're two different things.
Yeah, I think as you say, two streams there. There's some stuff around working with existing fans and potentially also including in that fans who were fans that have dropped away within the last season or two, which there's definitely a group of those, finding out how we can re-engage with them. But also there's that kind of expanding into new regions that we're not already involved with.
Cool. And so aside from that, did he mention anything about I remember you used the term investment.
Yep.
Did he mention anything about what they're looking to do to improve performance on the field and that sort of thing?
Well, I think the investment one's an interesting one. So it's I think lots of people have viewed any sort of investment as sale. I think there's definitely a view around the forums and around some fans that any sort of investment is basically them packing up and leaving. Rob has no intention of doing that. What he's interested in is obviously there's an ownership group. I don't actually know how many people are in there, but let's say it's seven or eight of them.
I think at this point in time it's seven. People do come and go from it.
Yeah, and they you know it's a separate company to the Phoenix. You know it's Wellnix Group and they have a shareholding and they manage that how they manage it. What they have there is obviously seven or eight or however many different views within there, and some people are wanting to get out of that group because they see the risk is getting too high with the license stuff coming up. Others are, you know, comfortable staying there. What he's talking about there is injections of new cash, because at this stage, obviously, there are a few guys who have continued to pump in decent amounts of money every single year. They're happy to do that, but they'd much rather spread that risk around between some more people. So if there's an option out there, whether it be in New Zealand or Australia, I've heard people talk about China or potentially European clubs coming in with an injection of more money that'll help them achieve some of this long-term stuff, that'd be fantastic. And they would be very open to that. What he's not open to, though, is selling anything greater than, say, 49% of the club, unless it's, you know, the blank check kind of offer where he's going to go, well, of course I'll take that. You know, if someone turned up with $100 million, they'd accept it, and I'd go, well, fair enough. But if, you know, someone turns up and goes, hey, I'd like to take a 10% stake, here's what we'd like to talk about around terms of that, they would definitely look at that.
So what we're talking about is investment at the Wellnix level, not the club.
Correct.
Not buying a license. It's literally pumping in money into Wellnix, still controlling the club. Your 49%, you know, as a max.
And you know, that's what he's talking about as an ideal situation. Obviously, the issue is he can't control what sort of offers come in. He has a responsibility as chairman to his investors to hear out offers. So we've heard Domi talk before about how there have been offers made in the past. Rob has a responsibility to go to those meetings and hear it out. Turning up and listening to an offer doesn't mean entertaining that offer or agreeing to the offer or anything like that. You know, he is the chairman of a company and he has a responsibility to his shareholders. So he will fulfill that. And I think speculation around meetings like that is going to continue. The longer this media cycle goes suggesting that the club is up for sale, despite the clear indications to the contrary, people are going to make these offers and he will continue to have a responsibility to go hear them.
But it's a legal requirement for to hear them out, isn't it?
Well, yeah, pretty much. He certainly has a responsibility to his shareholders to listen to those offers. I don't think he has a legal requirement to say go meet them face to face. But when people are talking millions of dollars, you probably, on a personal level, do go at least hear that face to face and tell them that doesn't sound like something we're interested in. But yeah, he can't control what the offers are going to be. If someone comes in and says, I want to buy 60%, maybe they will entertain that. You know, I don't think there's a hard limit here. It's all around what shape that takes and how it looks. But it's not something they're seeking. And it's not a thing that they are pushing out there of, hey, come to us with offers to buy us out.
And when they say we are not actively looking to sell the club, that's what that means. Yep. That means that they're not going around shopping the club around. No. People can still come to them, and they do. And that doesn't mean that they're looking to sell the club. And that's the distinction some people don't make, is that just because there was a meeting where they talked about some things doesn't mean that the Wellnick went into that meeting with the intention of getting rid of some of the club.
No.
And not at all in case.
The biggest outcome that Rob would like to see out of any investment is it securing the future in Wellington. You know, if we can get in some money and stuff that would mean more marketing and increased crowd numbers and better players and whatever it may mean for a club in Wellington, that's his goal here. It's not what I think will easily be viewed, and I can understand being viewed from a, you know, people around the traps. If that happens to be an Australian investor, this is not a slow transition to Australia. That's not what Rob's seeking here. I think because it's an Australian investor, people are going to assume that there's an ulterior motive from that investor of, oh, this is just a backdoor way into the A-League. You know, they'll buy 10% now, but it'll be 50% tomorrow, and 2 years from now it's 100%. You know, that's not what Rob's attempting to entertain here. He's not interested in that. And that's just because they're Australian won't mean that's the case. And yeah, Australian's definitely not the only thing he's looking at, but it's an Australian league. We're a club playing in an Australian league.
And the part where that Rob kind of left the meeting at, I think when we'll leave this chat, is that the club wants to remain in Wellington. And that is the long-term goal of what Wellington's doing, and everything that Rob is doing is he wants the club to remain in Wellington. This is a Wellington team. It's still called the Wellington Phoenix. It's never not going to be the Wellington Phoenix. And so that's an important thing, and Rob made sure that we understood that from the chat. And I think I want people listening to this to understand that as well, that everything that Wellington's are doing around having discussions or whatever is to attempt to keep the club in Wellington. And that is hard because of where they are at with the license. And so it's tough for them, but it's tough for everybody else. But that is what the goal here of Wellnix is to keep the club in Wellington, which I think we all want.
I think that's actually a good place to wrap it up.
Cool.
Unless anyone's got anything more?
Well, apart from Kiwis Overseas from Jared and Optivise.
Well, Cam, take it away.
I like your segue there, actually, mate. You segued much nicer than Patrick usually does.
Oh, two-wheeled segues. Sounds like me all over.
I set the segue up and what I said. I set it up.
It was a good softball, mate. It was.
Chris Wood scored his 11th goal of the season as Burnley went down 2-1 to Bournemouth in their final fixture of the season. Wood's quick reaction saw him redirect a mishit shot past the goalkeeper to give Burnley a lead before half-time. However, two defensive errors, including a defensive slip and stoppage time to give Bournemouth a late winner, was Burnley's end on a loss. Saw Burnley end on a loss. Wood ends the season having scored one goal for every 157 minutes played for Burnley, and they recorded their best league finish since 1974. Marco Rojas won't be joining them in European competition after Heerenveen lost their playoff semi-final against Utrecht on away goals. The home league was looking good for the Frisians as they went 3-0 up just after halftime, and their opponents reduced to 10 men when Utrecht midfielder Ayub received a second yellow card for giving the referee a thumbs up. However, Utrecht pulled back three goals to square up the match before Heerenveen managed a late winner to make it 4-3. Rojas made an appearance off the bench in the 72nd minute and came on at the same time in the second leg when Heerenveen trailing 2-0. Rojas managed to pull one back and level the scores in aggregate, heading in from close range, but Heerenveen couldn't find the final goal they needed to avoid going out on away goals. Tondela ended their season with a 1-0 loss to Vitória Setúbal, with Tyler Boyd getting 90 minutes in his last match before his loan spell ends. Despite the loss, Tondela recorded their best ever season, finishing 11th, while Boyd finished the season with 14 starts and 13 substitute appearances. Jeremy Brockie made a rare start in Mamelodi Sundowns' final league match against Bloemfontein Celtic. Brockie saw 85 minutes of action as the Sundowns drew 0-0 to end the season 5 points ahead of their nearest rivals in the PSL. Mamelodi's next match is a friendly, and he's just played that on Wednesday night against Barcelona before the Champions League resumes with a match against Guinean champions Horoya. Tommy Smith and Declan Wynne were in action again as Colorado Rapids went down 2-1 at home to New York Red Bulls. Despite conceding early, Colorado uncharacteristically, God, I can't speak on Saturday mornings, eh? Honestly, I need a whole day at work to warm me up to this. Dominated possession without creating many chances, but New York scored a controversial winner with the goal initially ruled out before VAR overturned the original offside decision. The Rapids have now lost three in a row and travel to New York City on Sunday. Elliot Collier came on in the 61st minute of Chicago Fire's 1-0 win over Montreal Impact before starting in the midweek loss to Columbus Crew. Collier had Chicago's best chance, hitting the post with the scores at 0-0 before Columbus took control of the match to win 3-0. The Fire faced Houston Dynamo on Monday. It was a disappointing week for Michael Boxall and Minnesota United as they lost to LAFC 2-0 in midweek, before putting in a better performance against San Jose Earthquakes but going down 3-1 after twice conceding from the penalty spot. Minnesota faced league leaders Sporting Kansas City on Monday. Stefan Marinovic sprained his knee in training and missed Vancouver Whitecaps 2-2 draw with Houston Dynamo, with Whitecaps coach Carl Robinson saying he may be out anywhere between 1 and 4 weeks. Also missing was Jake Gleason, who was on the bench for Portland Timbers in their 1-0 derby win over Seattle Sandals, but Bill Tuiloma made another appearance for Portland Timbers 2, who also had a derby against Seattle Sounders 2, winning by the same scoreline.
Did you say Seattle Sandals?
Sounders.
I heard Sandals.
Yeah, it's fair enough. Yeah. Kyle Adams played 90 minutes in both of Rio Grande Valley's matches this week as they drew 2-2 with Fresno FC, a side which did not feature Corey Brown this time round, before drawing 0-0 with San Antonio. James Musa also featured twice in the space of a week as Phoenix Rising beat OKC Energy 3-0 before defeating Tulsa Roughnecks 5-1. Phoenix Rising are now second in the USL table with 10 matches played so far. Nick Zarnav has extended his contract with League One side AFC Wimbledon by a further season, along with fellow reserve goalkeeper Joe McDonnell. There is currently a vacancy for the number one spot after last season's first choice keeper has left at the conclusion of his loan spell. Ali Riley featured for Rosengard as they scored secured a third Swedish Cup in a row by beating rivals Linköping in the final. Rosengard had the better of the chances and scored the only goal of the game from a corner midway through the second half, while Linköping were reduced to 10 players in the closing stages. Rosengard returned to league action against Kristianstad on Sunday. Abby Usyk scored the only goal of the game as North Carolina Courage beat Washington Spirit 1-0. The game saw a number of good chances for both teams, but Usyk's powerful header low across the goal from a wide free kick proved to be the difference, earning her the Player of the Match award. The Courage remained top of the NWSL as the only unbeaten team, and the clean sheet is their fifth from the opening eight matches. Sky Blue FC found the going tough against second place Seattle Reign, with Rebecca Stott's side going down 4-1. Sky Blue are bottom of the league with just 1 point so far and face North Carolina on Sunday. Katie Bowen was again an unused sub in Utah Royals 0-0 draw with Orlando Pride, while Rosie White was also on the substitutes bench for the first time since her surgery in the off-season as Chicago Red Stars drew 2-2 with Houston Dynamo. Utah host Houston on Sunday while Chicago travelled to Seattle. Michaela Moore joined Amber Hearn in the starting lineup as Cohn went down 4-2 to Turbine Potsdam. Hearn scored Cole's first goal, heading in a free kick from out wide, but Turbine were already turned up at that point and maintained their buffer throughout the match. There is a week-long break before Cole's host Werder Bremen in a must-win match to avoid relegation with only two games remaining. CJ Bott was also a starter as Jena were unlucky to lose 1-0 to SC Sand. Jena had the better of the chances, hitting the post twice, but their shaky attack, which has only managed 12 goals in 20 games, couldn't find a way through. Jena faced Freiburg when the league resumes. Erin Naylor played her first game since March as Bordeaux went 1-0, down 1-0 to PSG. With two rounds remaining, Bordeaux could finish anywhere between 4th and 11th in the 12-team Division 1. With matches against mid-table opposition coming up, starting with Soyo, I think that's right, on Sunday. Juventus won their final match against Tavanaccio 4-0 with Katie Rude and unused sub. The result sees Juve end on equal points with Brescia, requiring a playoff match to decide the title, despite Juve ending the season with a superior goal difference and better head-to-head record. Rude has made six appearances off the bench this season for Juventus, totaling 53 minutes of game time.
Thanks, Cam, and thanks, Jared, from Optivise. I think that's all it, gents.
Yeah, that's everything.
Good. Thanks for listening, and goodbye from all four of us.
Dave's the most articulate member of the pod.
I'm articulate, you fucking cunt.